Hey Nicholas, hey Mark, how are you guys today?
Doing great.
Great.
Thanks.
How are you, Tim?
Good, good, man. Thanks. Thanks for joining. Mark, it's been a while. How have things been on your end?
Crazy. I mean, it's a changing world. COVID came around, and I don't know if it's so much panic as a lot of things had to come into play, but company-wise, it's been really good for us, and it's been busy. It's been busy.
Good for you. Nick, what about you?
Things are crazy on our end. Working in government funding in uncertain times, it's one of those more secure sources of financing. So it's definitely been a very popular thing for us over the past few months.
Oh, I bet. I bet. So yeah, today we're going to be discussing the state of R&D in cannabis, and no better two people to discuss that with than the two of you. But before we start, I'd like for you guys to introduce yourselves, your background, the companies you guys work for, and just some of your experiences. I'll start with you, Nick.
All right, so I'm Nicholas Garcia. I work for Leighton Finder Expert. We are a consulting company focused on funding for innovation projects, mainly through government tax credits and other grant programs. And this has been basically my entire career. I have a background in chemical engineering, but I've been working in this industry for close to 15 years now.
Nice. Mark?
My name is Mark Pelican. I'm with Kanapco Pharmaceutical Corp. We've been around in cannabis industry since about late 2013 when it started with medical. It was just coming out and announced in 2014. And we've ridden the change all through the Liberal government, the launch of recreation, from the grow side, the technology side. Prior to that, I guess I'm your serial entrepreneur. Back at University of Toronto days, I was building computers, the old XTs, ATs, which I know kind of not only the gray, it makes me a bit of a dinosaur, but literally building them in my dorm room at the frat downtown at St. George and Bloor and selling them to faculty on campus, all the way through the Cantel and Bell days and into tech and then into different financial products, the software industry through the old Comdex shows and whatnot. So yeah, how you end up in cannabis, I have no idea how it happened.
That's exactly what I was about to ask next. To go from financial telecom to cannabis, was there
You
something that
know
sparked?
what? As an entrepreneur, things just happen. So
Yeah.
if somebody would have said when we were in software, would you be going into internet? We were one of the first two companies that brought internet to Ontario. Possibly one of the first two in Canada, us with Internex Online, with a company called Infinity Online, which we later sold to Primus. So we were entrenched in the internet industry at the time, always cutting edge tech. We were involved in internet on Linux boxes before you even had a Windows browser with WinSock. And if you would have told me, I would have been in mining or oil and gas, which I was in, and then moving into, for example, an auction interface, software development, cannabis. Each time, 2 years before, you would have asked me that question, I would have said, you're crazy. Certainly with cannabis. How that started, one of the senior executives with me, no joke, walked into my office and we were doing mining gemstones out of Colombia and in Africa at the time, emeralds and diamonds. And he said, hey, Mark, why don't we get into cannabis? And I looked at him and said, yeah, my wife would really love that. Be a drug dealer. That's great. I knew nothing about it. Nothing. I wasn't following the trends. I didn't know the medical aspect. I didn't know what was happening. So he came back to me 2 years, 2 weeks later and said, did you look into it? No, I don't. You're serious. I thought you were joking. So I looked into it, and I have a background in biology and business. I have an MBA as well. And we happened to have all the necessary components to move into the industry. And it was the Wild West back then. And we thought this is going to be a great opportunity, and we made the decision to jump in, and we did. That's how it started, just a fluke.
Good for you. And Nicholas, I know you mentioned you've always been working with government grants. How did you end up there?
Well, so I mentioned I have a background in engineering, and this is basically consulting with these types of tax credits. Turns out that it's something that engineers are very good at. So it's something I kind of gravitated towards after university. I had gotten an internship before I even finished my degree at a company that was specialized in this. And, much to my surprise, it ended up being basically my entire career. And the cool thing about it is basically that you get to learn about R&D and innovation in, you know, any industry, really. And, you know, one of the more interesting ones to see that has definitely been cannabis. And, you know, it's, I think it was a safe bet to say that this was going to happen after it became legalized. But I think it's also been a surprise how sort of quickly it happened and, you know, how much these companies are investing in this. But also, as I got more familiar with the industry, it's something that became more evident in that, I mean, there's still, the industry is still facing a lot of challenges right now, but definitely R&D is one of those mechanisms through which they're trying to address these challenges and, you know, notably reduce fixed costs, which is one of the big problems for producers right now.
For sure. And maybe, Mark, you can kind of touch up on that. There are some, as Nicholas was mentioning, you know, lots of perceptions out there. You know, how did you kind of hone in and focus and, you know, stay focused on your mission?
Are you talking about in respect to the R&D side of things? Or?
Yeah.
So it's more along the lines of, as a CEO, you look at what's available to you to maximize your benefit. If there's a program available from the government, and at the time, we were not ready to commercialize or move forward in that way, so R&D just made sense. And the idea was, you have all these different people in the cannabis industry, and a lot of them are doing the same thing. I mean, it becomes very cliche. We grow cheaper than everybody else, and we have the best product. I mean, that on Bay Street or in any kind of financial market, once you've heard it 100 times, it's great for the first guys getting financed. But the reality is, I think you need to differentiate yourself. And one of the ways that you can differentiate yourself is be unique. And exploring the R&D aspect to solve a problem, create something new, do something better, just seems to make sense. And the industry itself put everybody in a holding pattern. And I'll blame a number of factors, but at the time, for example, in the early days, it's 100% our government. They just sat and waited. And as they waited and cannabis companies were either burning money waiting, we took the approach of we need to do something to be productive. And we embarked on an R&D approach in order to solve problems, differentiate ourselves, make ourselves better. And I think that it's certainly, if you would have asked me in hindsight, it was almost like, well, we really don't have any other options. But in hindsight, it definitely was the way to go for us because it really ratified our value proposition in a very strong way. So, and we wouldn't have done that if the R&D programs that Nick works with don't exist, because you have to start questioning the financial viability. Can we sit and just burn money for the sake of burning money? Where is it going to go? You need that government support in order to accomplish something.
Yeah, definitely.
Nicholas, you want to add to that, or?
Yeah, and I definitely think that this is just in its infancy, though. It's only been 2 years since legalization, and sort of the only program that does even sort of cover even remotely the cannabis industry would be SR&ED tax credits. And that said, I think that this is something that the government's going to start paying more attention to, just because of the scale of the industry is going to keep becoming bigger and bigger. Now, you know, whether they choose to fund it directly or not, that's anyone's guess. But I think we're only seeing the beginning of this, and I'm very interested to see where it'll go, you know, as much from a government perspective as from an industry perspective. And, you know, suffice to say, some of the projects I've seen or I've heard about maybe that are coming up makes me very excited to see where the state of the industry is going to be in, like, 5 years maybe.
For sure. And what are some of the bigger or, you know, biggest trends that you're seeing in R&D in the cannabis space now? And I'll pose that question to the both of you. Obviously, Mark, you being in the middle of it, you probably keep tabs on, you know, what some of your competitors might be doing out there as well. Like, what are you seeing? Where, you know, where are the biggest trends? Where is the industry kind of going towards?
Well, I think there's really two trends. There's the trends that make sense and the trends that will get financed. Sometimes they cross over, sometimes they don't. For example, a trend that makes sense is cost reduction, growing better, doing things more efficiently, making a better product, solving certain problems that might exist in the industry. Like, I mean, how much cannabis gets wasted from things like remediation, mold, microbiology aspects, microbial aspects, to, you know, this particular product. It's very different than the cannabis industry in general is very different than, let's say, a software manufacturing or development platform, or a hardware development platform, where, you know, you're developing something. Maybe you're developing a satellite dish, or you know, a new wheel for a car. These are mechanical aspects. Sure, you have things like contamination and dirt and whatnot, but when you start dealing with biological factors, there's a lot of uncertainty that happens. And I think that uncertainty has moved into the cannabis industry and is very relevant with respect to, you know, crops rot on field. X company has lost X amount of dollars. X company, it costs $7 to grow a gram and whatnot. Now that has tightened up a little bit, but all of these are an indication with operations. And with cannabis, it's very, very unique, because you had an industry which was, I mean, let's call it what it is. It was moonshine. It was the illegal industry. It was the underground industry done in basements. And you have a bunch of guys going, I can grow cannabis and I'm going to do a whole farm of it now. And they can't. And then you have farmers, and I've spoken to this at various events. You know, I people get offended in the audience when I pop up a slide and it says, if you're a vegetable farmer, you can't grow cannabis. And you can't. I don't care who you are. You might be able to grow, but you need to learn and adapt to be a cannabis farmer. Knows better, cannabis farmer, Christmas tree growers, because you're essentially growing a tree in 2 months. You're not growing a little bushy, you know, bunny cottontail root system of lettuce. It doesn't work. So this is where advancements come in, whether it's, you know, fixing wasted product, growing cheaper, applying, I mean, it could be anything like mitigating smell, which is a factor to, you know, neighboring business operations. It can be anything. Whole bunch of new challenges that we don't even know. Different nutrient, water contamination, you know, anything and everything. And that's where, you know, it really fits in to devote some time and effort to better something. Because one small change could mean a huge difference to the industry in general. Like Nick said, we're not even there yet. There's so much that needs to be fixed, implemented, and grown in moving from pots in a basement hiding out from the police, you know, trying to sell illegally, to all of a sudden a fully commercialized, you know, baby tobacco industry in essence. There's a lot we don't know in commercialization of cannabis, and that's where the R&D programs come in.
Definitely. And, you know, the fact that it was previously illegal, I think, has definitely influenced the beginnings of the industry, in that a lot of people are still functioning in that sort of artisanal mindset, where things have definitely scaled up, but they're not, I guess they're not as high tech as such a high dollar crop would warrant normally, if it hadn't come from this place of being illegal. But what's interesting, though, is that I'm starting to see some of this happening, and some companies are focused on very much on the high tech aspects of growing. So things like tissue propagation and genetic manipulation are starting to become topics that we're seeing appear in R&D in the cannabis industry. And, you know, that definitely, you know, for better or for worse, we'll see what happens with that, because, you know, just the fact that you're using these new high technology aspects doesn't guarantee profitability, which ultimately is obviously the goal of this industry and what's been the most difficult thing to achieve. But, you know, they're putting all the chances on their side to get a chance to reach that profitability. And also, I think that definitely one of the things I'm more interested about is the sort of trickle down effect from all these technologies. Because cannabis is a high dollar crop, it gives people a chance to do R&D that costs a lot of money. Whereas for things like the vegetable growing industry, they would never do that. Well, there are some, but those companies, you know, they're few and far between. But with these technologies developed on high dollar crops, we'd have a chance to see these advanced indoor cultivation techniques, for example, get it used in the agriculture industry at large. And this could lead to things like decentralization of agriculture, which could reduce transport costs and, you know, ultimately be like a really huge thing for society. But, you know, there's not much indoor culture of fruits and vegetables going on these days because, again, fixed costs are way too high right now. So I think that's definitely an interesting aspect to look forward to. And also, there's a lot of R&D going on in peripheral industries. And this is another trend that we have only seen basically the tip of the iceberg. And notably, the use of cannabinoids in pharmaceutical applications. You know, just CBD, like I'm sure you guys have heard a lot about that lately. But, you know, we're starting to see companies that are focused exclusively on combinations of CBD and other known pharmaceuticals. And I think that we're just going to keep seeing it more and more of these things. And we haven't even basically touched on its potential. And also we haven't necessarily focused exactly what it is because, you know, if you talk about CBD, it's touted as this kind of wonder drug that can do everything. And, you know, it is very interesting, but I think there's also a bit of a perception problem right now where they're presented as this sort of panacea and we don't really know what it can't do yet. So there's still a lot of research to be done for that.
And I know, Nicholas, you touched up on some of the perceptions out there. You know, how do we get away from that? I mean, Mark as well, like, how do you bring some sort of legitimacy to the industry as a whole?
Well, I think that the legitimacy aspect isn't so much a problem, especially in Canada. There's such widespread acceptance of cannabis. And it's even funny, I'll relate a couple of personal experience. All of a sudden, a high-profile lawyer would come into the office and it's like, isn't it great? Yeah, now I don't have to, you know, smoke in the garage and whatnot. And we're looking at him going, you smoke cannabis? You got to be kidding me. You know, and this is a guy that honestly you think, you know, he starches his pants every day and, you know, it's always picture perfect. The absolute perfect Windsor nut. Same thing with accountants and people in high profile places that you would think, you know, principals and schools and teachers and whatnot, where, oh my gosh, no. And we tell our kids don't smoke cannabis. Honestly, I think everybody smokes cannabis. Everybody. I have old ladies, grandmothers coming to me going, you know, oh, my shoulder, it hurts. And I heard CBD. Where do I get, which CBD is good? And you're sitting there going, grandma, okay, you know, just go to a dispensary, go to the OCS and buy some CBD. Creams, lotions, potions, vapes, anything. So perception, I'm just going to get off it and say, I don't think it's that bad. I think the smell aspect sometimes is a little bit harsh for some people or whatnot. Maybe it's a little bit derogatory, but I don't think anybody looks at someone else and says, oh, you're smoking cannabis. You're a bad person. You know, you're doing something wrong. That doesn't happen. I do think that, you know, should it be known that, you know, you deke down two or three times a day from your office tower in your hoity-toity office and, you know, you've got important financial meeting during the day and everybody, you know, smells cannabis on you. Perhaps that's not such a great thing. But if somebody knows you don't integrate that when in an inappropriate environment, like working, driving or whatnot, I don't think that's the problem. Where I think that there's a problem is the fact that since it stems from the illegal market, and it totally pertains to what Nicholas is doing, there's a lack of information. 80% if you go to the YouTube videos and you look online for information, I can tell you from personal experience, you know, having a science background, building grow systems, you know, involved, I'm deeply entrenched in the science of cannabis and in the numerous aspects. 80% of it is absolute garbage. So you have to try and disseminate what bit of information you can get from that, you know, extra 20%, what's good, what's bad. And then you have to incorporate it into your own R&D and see what you come up with. And I think part of the problem, just to exacerbate that scenario, is that you have all this information coming to a commercialized environment and people failing because, oh, we're going to do this. and it fails on the grandest scale imaginable to the tunes of tens of millions of dollars. Shareholders get pissed off. Market confidence goes down. And then all of a sudden, you have a negative shift in the industry. And what do? Right? Like all of a sudden, money's drying up because, oh, people aren't doing it right and bad things happen. Bad people, or people that perhaps, I'm not going to slam them in that way, but maybe perhaps from a business aspect shouldn't be in charge of money or decision making in a larger cannabis company, come in, do some things that upset a lot of people. I mean, look at the public example, the CanTrust example. You know, here's something that happened, and let's not point blame, but something happened, and it was really bad. And it was at a time when the industry was unsure of itself. The financial side wasn't as trusting as it was. You used to say cannabis, and somebody threw a big, huge basketball wad of, you know, $100,000 bills at you, as much money as you wanted. And then some bad things happen. That's where I think the illegitimacy of the industry and the bad choices of the industry affects everybody. And on that teetering point, the entire market came close to collapsing. Then it has to come back up, and now you're riding a wave. And it's an honest roller coaster ride. And then the government making mistakes, because this is the first time they're doing it. That's the illegitimacy of the market. I mean, honestly, leave it up to Canada to launch cannabis years in front of everybody else and not make money. Only industry anywhere. It happens because of caution. Acceptance, yes. People making mistakes, lots of them. And I think we're now on that second wave where people don't trust, but a lot of things are coming out. And also companies are saying, okay, the easy money's gone, and they lean towards things like R&D credits, and they lean towards government grants. And I'm going to go back, and I'm going on a little bit, but it's so important, the type of thing Leighton does and Nicholas does, and this is honestly even a shameless plug for you, Nick. It's a fact. I went through the ranks. We went through from 2013, and the government didn't do diddly squat for us or anybody else. So let's examine this for 1 second and the importance of being able to actually access government funds. Go to BBC. What were we told? You're a cannabis company. Don't talk to us. Click. That was it. Now, remember, the government said, hey, cannabis is good. We're going to implement it. Here we go. But screw you. Go to the agricultural fund. I'm sorry. Last time I looked, was cannabis a plant, Nick? I don't remember. It grows, right? Agricultural funds. No, you're cannabis. Banks, try and get a bloody bank account. Now, remember, you're supported by the government. It's government mandated. There were examples where people won the lottery and they couldn't get a bank account in order to pay their cannabis dispensary fees. It was a huge issue. There were lawsuits on it. Why couldn't you get an account? Where's the government support? Cannabis is great. We're going to revolutionize the world, but we're going to make it hard as hell for you to do business. And it's gotten slightly better, but not much. So trust me when I say if cannabis companies are in earnest trying to do good and they're trying to do R&D or trying to do something and funds are available, they need to be able to access those funds.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I mean, who knows how long it'll take, but I think we'll reach some sort of equilibrium. You know, as much with people's enthusiasm when it initially became legal, where you're saying they were throwing basketballs full of money at cannabis entrepreneurs, to now they're being a bit more cold because of some of the issues that there's been. You know, ultimately we'll arrive at a more, I guess, regular model of investing, where, you know, not only will the people who are investing do it in a more reasoned way, but the entrepreneurs themselves will have a more reasoned approach, and, you know, they'll realize that they actually have to think about what they're doing and, you know, do their R&D properly. So, you know, it feels like something that eventually some sort of equilibrium will be reached. And, you know, with regards to the government, I think that that is sort of inevitable considering where this came from. But that said, I think that they're quickly going to realize that, you know, you can't have your cake and eat it too. And if you're going to take advantage of the taxes that come out of this industry, well, you're going to need to give a little bit back as well.
Fair enough. And I'm a firm believer of, you know, vision, capital, and your people offer, you know, the best competitive advantage. Mark, how have you been recruiting? How have you been, you know, getting the best technical talent? Because obviously with some of these tax credits, your people internally are just as important as anything.
Well, we have a very, very tight-knit group of people. From my older entrepreneurial days, when we were involved in technology, internet, some of our other initiatives and endeavors, we actually just went back to our past groups, people we trusted, people that we could count on, and we put together a very, very strong team. We haven't been recruiting very much, not with COVID and everything that's happened as a company. You know, this, I can't ignore, we have to be very fluid with whatever happens. And the worst day of my recent life was, I remember March 15th, COVID came around and we laid off everybody, including myself, just laid everybody off. Why? Because nobody knew what was going on. And funny enough, I had a conversation with all my staff on, I think it was January 8th, we'd just come back. And I said, look what's happening. And remember, I'm a biologist. Numbers don't lie. It's a simple, Excel tells the truth. And when you see what's happening in other parts of the world and you understand vectors and biological components, you know it's going to happen here. You know the shelves are going bare. You know people are going to freak out. You know that whatever happened in Italy or somewhere else is going to come here. So we had to take measures. And to cut a long story short, when we talk about recruitment, we have access in the industry just from knowing people and you know, competent people that, you know, perhaps are interested in making a change. But us as a company, I guess that question kind of falls off. I'm not able to answer it accordingly because we've never been in a mass recruiting phase. Now, we are associated with other companies in the industry that hired so fast that they lost control. They just literally, they doubled in size month after month, and people were being hired because they thought they needed people, but the people weren't trained. They didn't know what they were doing. I think now things have just calmed down a lot. The industry, as opposed to being up here or down here or whatnot, it's kind of going like this. And dispensaries are a perfect aspect. They took a block off dispensaries. Now there's too many dispensaries. Mark my words. Again, just do the math, divide out the number of dispensaries. Like, sure, you got a great location. You have a great location. But it's honestly, I compare cannabis dispensaries now to frozen yogurt places. Remember a bunch of years ago, frozen yogurt places were popping up in every single little strip plaza and shopping mall. And then all of a sudden you started seeing them die off. You know, the margins are set. The government involvement is there. You have no ability to become special except for the user experience that when you walk in the store. I personally think that that's wrong, but it's not for me to say. So we're going to see another market adjustment on the retail side. I think we're going to see a lot of people in trouble after, you know, government support wanes itself over the course of our getting back to normal scenario. And you have to have something special or you have to be able to differentiate yourself. So that's what's important in cannabis right now, being special. And on Nick's side, any technologies developed in Canada, Canada itself, it sucks. There's just too small of a market. I always say the entire Canadian market, for as large as this country is smaller than, I think it's a 2.5 or 3 hour ride from central Los Angeles. And by the way, central Los Angeles basically sits on the ocean. So you're looking at a half circle. And it's very difficult to spend the money and service just this industry. So you have to look at R&D tech, differentiating yourself and looking at a much larger industry, which is overseas.
Perfect. Well, listen, guys, Nicholas, Mark, really appreciate you guys coming on today, sharing your expertise. Thank you and have a wonderful day.
Agents of Change, a Latent podcast, does not constitute a recommendation for any organization, product, or service. It's produced and recorded by Blumex.